struggle between what you want to have, what you want to achieve. What is that? Nature, for example, appears to us as an obstacle. Schelling says it is not an obstacle at all. Hegel will say it is not an obstacle. But what is it? It is subordinate. It is subservient to the self. There is a difference between, you must understand that it is an obstacle. You want to remain, just as the light comes and there is an obstacle. And then it returns back. And then you can say that the obstacle is removed, then the light comes again. Similarly, when the obstacle is removed, then there will be moral progress in Fichte. But not by moral progress, but by aesthetic progress, by what we are gainers. That is what Schelling supports. It is subservient, nature is subservient to the self. He is not an obstacle to the self. The obstacle is not to be removed and made, you know, the enemy is not to be converted into friend. No, he is not at all an enemy. But then what is he? He is just like ourselves. And we have to just make an achievement. What is that achievement? We have to see that it is just the same. You take a flower and it is a model for you. You see, you have it on a canvas. What is it that you are doing? You are imitating nature. Are you removing an obstacle? No, you are not removing an obstacle. You are finding some joy in creative activity. So Schelling says that there is a creative activity latent in man, and that creative activity produces something which is akin to nature, which is in sympathy with nature. The nature is produced. Once again, it is not there outside in space and time, it is in your mind also. So that nature is produced, reproduced again, and that reproduction is what is known as art. That is the imitation of nature. It is not morality that is high, it is the art. Art is the noblest function of man. That is what Schelling comes to know. You remember in this connection what Plato said, art is doubly removed from reality. Art is doubly removed from reality, meaning thereby, I am no doubt an imitation of God, man framed after the image of God, not God framed after the image of man. If God is framed after the image of man, then it will be anthropomorphism. But if man is framed after the image of God, it will be a religious instinct. And afterwards, if you have a photograph of man, then of course it will be a photograph of a copy of a copy. So it will be doubly removed in Plato. But here Schelling says, no, it is just the reality. Because in nature also there is spirit, and in man also there is spirit. And the spirit speaks to spirit. In art it is that the spirit is speaking to spirit, not in morality. In the morality, first thinks the not-self as an enemy, as an obstacle. We are not thinking that way. It is our friendly. It is in sympathy with us. But that friend we want to keep as close as to ourselves. If you love your beloved, then your beloved will not be at a distance, but it will be in your heart, you see. The beloved will be in your heart. The lovers, the two lovers, will have each of them in their heart first. So that, you know a story about Napoleon? When Napoleon went to see the hospitals, as our leaders are going sometimes out of, I don't know what motive, but they are going to meet the hospital. So Napoleon also went to the wounded soldiers, and one of them said, well, I have no doubt a bleeding wound in my near the heart. Kindly, sir, he said to Napoleon, emperor, kindly, sir, pierce a little below and you will find the picture of Napoleon there. That is written by Abbott, I believe, in the biography of Napoleon. So just like that, the lovers have the photographs of each other. Actually, they are living in the hearts of each other. Similarly, that is the great art. That is the noblest function of art. What you have latent there in your heart, you produce it outside. That's all. So what is outside is inside. Schelling says, in that lies the great art. Not in morality, but in art lies the noblest function of man. He too is going from thesis to antithesis and reconciling again. What is that? He is trying to go to his beloved from where? From his heart, inside, to a to the actual woman or to the actual man outside. And then it is reconciling in that final, you can say, fruition of love. So that final fruition of love is the absolute of the artistic movement that goes on into the two lovers. Nature is alive, man is alive, though nature also wishes to have connection, intimacy with man, and man also wishes to have intimacy with nature. Therefore, we try to go towards nature by not going outside the garden, then having a canvas on the picture of all. We feel at peace with the Niagara Falls, you see. We feel as if it is, that is why we take photographs of it, you see. Meaning, in the photograph we find the whole nature outside, as if on the canvas, and from that also in the mind. So, here, as the Sterling calls it, as the spirit speaks with the spirit. The spirit in man speaks with spirit in nature, and the spirit in nature speaks in return with the spirit in man, and together they make the harmonious in the absolute mind, because that is also living. So there is the thesis, the antithesis, and also the absolute and the synthesis. The thesis is there, the antithesis is there, and the synthesis is there. In Fichte, the thesis is there, the antithesis is there, and also the synthesis. Even so it is here. And then you find even in Hegel. Schelling goes forward and says, not only nature, but every phenomenon, it is so. Gravity. Everywhere there is push and pull. But the push and pull are not separating each other, they are coming together. You can push this way and pull, no doubt, but they are not opposite forces, they are friendly forces. They come towards each other, you see. They are not just going away, they are forces which come together, which bind. And that is the art, you see. That which binds you together, that which binds in one love, act of love, that is. Activity alone can know activity. Freedom alone can know freedom. Just as I told, it is generous man alone who can appreciate generosity in others. Similarly, it is activity of mind that can see the activity in nature. Yesterday I told you that one would not like to pluck a flower from the plant because it looks more beautiful on the plant rather than plucking it and putting it on your buttonhole, or you can say, what is that called, here, as well, or putting it on a stone or an adob. What beauty is there? Let it stand there. Will it not be the symbol of God? Will it not be divine there? If you worship the plant and if you appreciate it, will it not be, the devotion towards God? Or should you pluck it and put it on some arrow? That is the devotion. Yes, that is in art lies the greatest devotion. That is what Schelling says. And beyond that comes Hegel. Hegel builds on the premises of Fichte and Schlegel. And these two have got the premises or the conclusions of Kant. So they have not gone much beyond Kant. That is why I say whether they are post-Kantian or pre-Hegelian. There is a doubt. What is pre-Hegelian is a post-Kantian. And Hegel builds on the shoulders of Fichte and Schelling. He goes beyond them. But he only puts it on a rational and scientific basis, what his predecessors wanted, Schelling especially, his friend, wanted to say. There is also the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis. But as he has given a scientific turn, a philosophical turn, to the thoughts of Fichte and Schlegel, we know only Hegel's philosophy. Hegel's philosophy is only a concluding portion of Fichte and Schelling. I am not wrong in saying this because I tell you, one of the most greatest historians of philosophy, Falkenberg, has devoted 100 pages for Kant and 14 pages to Hegel. You find it? Of all the histories, I find Falkenberg's history the best, and history of philosophy. And there he has given 100 pages to Kant and 14 pages to Hegel. What does it mean? And before Hegel, you have made a transition to Fichte and Hegel. There you find, you see, the entire picture in miniature about Hegel. So, of course, Hegel is a great person, But much has been done unnecessarily about Hegel, especially by the communists, you see, because they found sufficient material for their own pet theory. Oh, you see, it is not so. I am talking from the philosophical point of view and not from the political point of view. Remember that. And I am pointing out to you only the key points of every one of them, not doing anything more than that. In Hegel, then, we find the same thesis of Fichte or of Hegel put on a scientific foundation. He says, the self and the not-self, remember that, or the mind and nature, and now he has this slight, by a sleight of hand, Hegel says, the laws of thought and the laws of being, the rational and the real. What is rational is real. Have we not said the same thing now in Fichte and Schelling? Have we not said the same thing in Kant also, that it is a counterpart of the same thing? The thing in itself, the knowable part of thing in itself, is just the counterpart of self. Then what has Hegel said? It is nothing but indifferent language. He has paraphrased it. This all right. The real and the rational. The rational meaning as given by reason, as given by thought, as given by mind, is just the same thing as you find in nature, as reality, being. But the philosopher is neither satisfied with being nor with thought. He is satisfied with becoming. And therefore Hegel has to make certain reference to the becoming also. He says, being has got several stages. A plant germinates. A plant, you can say, a flower germinates, or a plant germinates. And then it has got flowers, it blossoms. The plant withers and the plant dies. For a discursive intelligence, you can have four stages. The germination, the blooming, the withering, and the dying. This is the whole history of that plant. This is the whole history of man. This is the whole history of nature. Then what do you find here? We are find stages of growth. We are find epochs. One epoch goes away, and another epoch comes. A new era comes, you see. On the destruction of something, another construction is made. This is nature. The nature is sometimes, the being is here, the being is there, the being is here. And all that will be nothing but one stage of development. Who develops it? It is the absolute mind. Where is it located? It is located everywhere. It is located in the mind of man. It is located in history. It is located in nature. It is located in the absolute mind. So, what is there? It is the developing or the self-consciousness, coming to self-consciousness of the absolute mind in man. So, where is the destiny then? It is towards truth and goodness. As Hegel says, the destiny is towards truth and goodness. That is the destiny. So who is developing? It is nothing, the absolute alone. Who is potential in man and becoming gradually revealed in nature and in the history of men, in the political institutions of men, in societies, in organized political constitutions, that is growing. And that when will it go to a final stage? When there will be truth and goodness everywhere. So the truth and goodness everywhere is the destiny of that developing mind, namely God. That is the synthesis of what is potentially there in man as well as in nature. Appears not as an obstacle now. As in Schelling, it was not an obstacle. In Fichte only it was obstacle, therefore there was ethical idealism. In Schelling, it was not an obstacle, it was subservient to man, and that is why man can copy the nature on a canvas, and it was aesthetic idealism. And here, it is absolute idealism or logical idealism, because these concepts in the head of a man are there. They are revealed in nature. They are revealed in the developing absolute of God. God is not different from the world. God is not different from man. God is not different from the creation. You see, God is not God without the world. With world, that is, he is a sort of pantheism in Hegel. You will see that man and nature are nothing but stages in the developing process of the consciousness of the absolute, which is latent in man and which is also latent in nature. There is a thesis, there is an antithesis, and above that there is the
There is what is known as the synthesis.
So in Fichte, Schelling and Hegel you will find the same process of thesis, antithesis, this dialectical movement as is technically known. Dialectical movement. The dialectic runs from thesis to antithesis. And from antithesis they are both of them subsumed in the third, namely what is known as the synthesis of the two. It goes forward, but it is stopped and both of them are eaten, you see. Just as a man may go for hunting, and he may hunt, he may have the shikar of a lamb, and a tiger may come and eat both man and deer. Similarly, you will find that the man goes out, finds nature, and eaten up again by the absolute. But the absolute of Hegel is not the same absolute of Spinoza. It is not the absolute of Schelling. Hegel does not agree with Schelling, though he was his friend, and to a certain extent, you see, he shared with him. He does not absolute that all cows are black in darkness. He does not accept that. Why does he not accept it? It is not an all-devouring absolute. Because what is contained in absolute is already potent, is already potential in man. The absolute is developing in man. The absolute is developing in nature. So there is nothing you can say separation between one kind of absolute, the potential absolute, or the revealing absolute, or the self-conscious absolute. Ultimately, man becomes self-conscious, meaning thereby identical with the absolute. Nature becomes, we don't know, but scientists have said that the nature also have got life. Nature also, Sir Jagdish Chandra Bose, for example, has said that plants also have got life. Plants also shudder with fear. Plants also are glad when you take water to them. Plants shudder when you take a weapon in your hand and cut them. So that is what the scientific discovery is. If that is true, then there is unconscious life and unconscious purpose in, you see, mute they are. Just as we say, the cows and buffaloes and bulls, have they not emotions? Have they no emotions at all? Have they no are they not sensitive to pain and pleasure? But they are dumb. They cannot speak. Even so, the plant life, the vegetable life cannot speak. And put in the Lebanese, they are slumbering monads. They are not wakeful monads. Their monads are there everywhere. But in plants and the vegetable kingdom, they are slumbering monads. In man alone, they are wakeful monads. They become conscious. You see, I can speak out. Oh, it's a horrible pain. It is excruciating pain. What that Mansur says, there is excruciating pain on the shuri. Why is it? Because he has a tongue to speak. And the animal, the beast, they have no tongue to speak. But does it mean that there is absence of pain? They are not sensitive to pain or pleasure. They are. You see. So they find that, Hegel finds that that is unconscious, you see, the absolute becomes conscious of itself and becomes self-conscious of itself. So the self-consciousness is the highest thing which is possible for man as well as for nature. We do not know at what time our trees will begin to speak, you see. But at least philosophically or by the imagination, they think that there is life in plant, etc. Some of the British thinkers in the West, Nanishwar, for example, has said, the whole of the Ayurveda is based upon ahimsa. The whole of the Ayurveda, you see, is based upon the notion of ahimsa. They cut the plants, they cut at the roots, they take the barks, as if there is no life in it. As if there is no life in it. There is life everywhere. And we are having ahimsa for the sake of ahimsa, you see. Ahimsa is the means of going to the means of ahimsa. Meaning that I am only pointing out to you that all great men of the world have pointed out that there is nothing which is lifeless. Chaitanya, everywhere, life everywhere, purpose everywhere, you see. Pain and pleasure, sensitiveness to them everywhere. So it is all a teleological process, whether in man or in nature or in God. God also suppose the whole of the nature and men are annihilated and remain gods, then he doesn't know what to do alone. So he creates men for fellowship. God also loves men that they should come towards him and man also goes towards God. So there is affinity between God and man. There is affinity between God and nature, and there is affinity between nature and God. So in all things there is sort of sympathy and affinity and love. And we are bound together by one bond, namely of affinity, sympathy or love, whether it is man, God or nature. That is the ideal before Hegel. And he goes on to the final proof that ultimately there will be truth and goodness. So Fichte, Schelling and Hegel, they go by this dialectical movement and find that all the phenomena of nature in all the states of mind of man and consequently in all the states of the mind of God, there is one process, namely the dialectical process, from thesis to antithesis and from both of them consumed by the all-devouring absolute. Having said this, I pass on to Bradley, one of the greatest thinkers of modern period. Bradley. Just see that one philosophy grows out of another philosophy. You remember this always, and you will find everywhere from the earliest philosophers, Thales, for example, going up to... This is exactly I'm pointing out how the stream, the Ganges coming from Gangotri, there is it is one stream going up to the Ganga Sagar and Bay of Bengal. One stream, 1800 miles, the Ganga is one. Similarly, there is one flow of Western philosophy throughout. And that is a very remarkable thing about this, that one grows out of another. Just as the species grows, man begets man. Similarly, philosophy begets philosophy. And it is philosophy alone which can hear the music, which can hear the music between man and God, which can hear the music between man and nature, versus heard the music between man and nature, you see. And saints and sages heard the music between man and God. And Milton heard the music, not only man and God, or man and nature, music heard the spheres, music of the spheres that blind man heard, you see. Music of the spheres, that there is connection between moon and God, moon and the sun and the stars and man. A limited man, a tiny fellow, thinks of astrology. Why should he think of astrology? Why should he not think of devotion? A tiny person, one who has nothing to do in the world, he thinks of astrology and thinks the influences of Saturn and moon upon us. Then are we not influencing them, I ask? No astrologer in the world has said that man is influencing the Saturn and causing trouble to his Saturn or to the moon or to sun. Why should he not say that way? Because he is not a philosopher. And a philosopher who takes to astrology and just shines by his astrology only and not by philosophy is false to his profession. You see. And false to astrology also, because there is not a reciprocal movement. If God loves man, man loves God. If you love me, I love you. One person wrote to me, "Why do you love me? Why are you beautiful?" I said, "You see, meaning thereby, if you are beautiful, then my eyes also have, I have got some function to do. If the sun is there, why should the sunflower move in that very direction? Because there is something hidden in the sunflower, something hidden in the sun which attracts it. There is love. That tie of love will never be lost. Even so, we can find that one philosophy attracts another philosophy. If a man begets a man, similarly, you can find everywhere there is nothing but the kingdom of love. Everywhere a kingdom of activity, creative activity, as Aristotle also would say, man begets a man, non-man begets a buffalo, or buffalo begets a man. It's never, species are eternal. Species are eternal, and individuals may come and go. Institutions will prosper forever. Let the persons which are attached to the particular may come and go. Several persons may come and go, but the universe goes on. The absolute goes on everywhere. Let nature come and go. Let men come and go. You see, there will be different theses. There will be different antitheses, but the absolute will be one. Because in the absolute, everything is going on, you see, and bound by love only. So that is the picture of Fichte, Schelling and Hegel.
From this I pass on to two philosophers, namely Bradley and Bosanquet.
Bradley in his famous book of Appearance and Reality. It's a wonderful book, you see. The thesis of that book is appearance and reality. There is reality. And everything falling short of that reality is appearance. Don't mean by appearance an illusion. Illusion is something which is not there at all. Illusion. For example, the serpent is not there at all and you find it on the rope. That is an illusion. But an appearance means that which is there, which is not an illusion, which is perceptible, which can be touched, handled, seen, and yet perishable. And yet perishable. So that is what is known as appearance. Anything falling short of that absolute is perishable. Nature is perishable. Man is perishable. So man is an appearance. Nature is an appearance, but God is not an appearance. If you say this, then we have understood Bradley and Bosanquet in principle. They consider that what is reality? Reality is an harmonious system. Every part of which is in harmony with any other part and in harmony with the whole. Just as man is, just see it is how it is. Man, as I concluded, man in sympathy and in connection with nature, and both of them in connection, connected with God. Similarly, we find every part of an organism is connected organically, not mechanically, not artificially. Every part is connected with every other part. If you have these five fingers, if you lose fingers, then you will be hurt. If you have this, then you will be hurt. All the parts of the limbs of my body are organically connected, meaning the parts and the whole. They are not like parts of a chair. If one foot of a chair is broken, you can have another foot by means of a carpenter. This is not so. Even if a transplantation of a heart, it will be for a short time. Because after all, man is an automaton, as Descartes say. It is a machine, no doubt. But it is not a machine in this sense that a part is lost so that another part can be imported from foreign countries and just put into it. No, it is not that. It is perishable. It is organism. And the organism as a whole grows in proportion with the parts. The parts also grow and the organism, the whole, the parts are meant for the whole and the whole is meant for the parts. That is a harmonious system. Otherwise, if there is disharmony, then I shall have lose my fingers in course of time. Just as a leper, for example, you see, loses his limbs in course of time. It is not a complete organism. It is not a healthy organism. It is a diseased organism. It is organism, no doubt, but it is diseased organism. In a diseased organism, there is some defect either in the parts or in the whole. A tree, for example, look at the tree. The branches are for the tree, and the tree is for the branches. And the leaves, and the twigs, every part of it is organically connected with every other part. That is an organism. It is not a heap. Just as you have stones for a building, then this, from the quarry they bring stones and they put it. It is also a whole thing, you see. But it is a heap only. No part has connection with any other part. You can take one stone and throw it another. Then the other stones do not weep for the loss of that. Or if you can put some stone, the other stones are not glad about it. It is a heap after all. Unconscious things huddled together. Just as a postal bag, for example. You put all sorts of articles, postcards, envelopes, envelopes, post, and anything in that bag, and you tie it. Is it an organism? There are many things in the world. The post bag, the postal bag, for example, is not an example of organism. The tree is an example of organism. Man is an example of organism, you see, but not the heap of stones or the postal bag. It is not a thing. It is a mere heap of sundry things put together, all sundry things. Now here are the chairs and there is no such organism here between the walls and the steps, but there is an organism being immersed. There is sympathy, some sort of sympathy. We are associated with this institution. So that institutional love, that bond, creates a sort of
organic
whole amongst us. So Bradley says it is a harmonious whole, wherein every part is in connection with every other part, and all the parts are connected with the whole. Similarly, in the reverse manner, the whole is connected with every part and all the parts. That is an organ. Bradley. And he bases his thesis on the law of contradiction. Meaning, the law of contradiction tells us that if one thing is true, another cannot be false. It is nothing but a repetition of the law of identity. The law of contradiction states in a negative way what the law of identity tells us in a positive way. A is A, is the law of identity. But A is not A. It is put in a negative form, the law of contradiction. If A is A, then it cannot be anything other than A. Meaning what? It is A. Socrates is Socrates. This is the law of identity. Socrates is not anything other than Socrates. Meaning Socrates cannot be Plato. Socrates cannot be Aristotle, etc. This is the law of contradiction. Out of the two things which are contradictory, you can take only one thing to be true and other as false. If one is true, another is false. If one is false, another is true. That is the law of contradiction. If A proposition is true, then its contradictory O is false. And if E is true, then its contradictory I is false. If I is true, E is false. If O is true, A is false. Out of two contradictory propositions, one is true and the other is false. That's it. Then, if the whole of it is true, then the parts, for example, cannot be true. They will be appearances simply. That is what Bradley means by his great discovery of appearance and reality. There are appearances. Don't confuse them with the illusions. They are not illusions. They are there, space and time. They are there. You can handle them, touch them, see them. And even then, their appearances, meaning not as abiding, not as everlasting as the whole complexity. It's based on the law of contradiction. Appearance and truth, appearance and reality, they are two things. Which is real? Then Bradley says, reality is real, not this. And what is meant by reality? That it is an all-developing system in which there are parts. The parts and the whole are organically connected. There is coherence. There is non-contradiction between them. So Bradley bases his thesis upon the law of non-contradiction. Coherence. It is not correspondence. It is coherence. Yes, give and take there is. There is an exchange of ideas. There is reconciliation. There is pardon, there is forgiveness, etc. There are sins, no doubt. There are omissions, commissions. But after all, in spite of it, there is harmony still. There may be different notes, you see. But ultimately, there will be one. There will be different instruments, but there will be one harmony. There will be different instruments producing different sounds, but there will be one harmonious thing. There will be clapping of things, but there will be one chorus. Similarly, there will be all these things huddled up together, but to a philosopher, everything will be, how is it? Beautiful, good, truthful, real. That will be the verdict of a philosopher so far as Bradley is concerned. Everything which appears short of it, less coherent, contradictory, you see, then it will be an appearance. So there will be naturally then more and more of reality and less of appearance, or more and more of appearance and less of reality. That is why in Bradley you will find degrees of truth. A man is worse than another man. A man is better than another man. Why? Because there is a degree of truth and goodness and badness about it. A man may be worse than another man. A may be better than B or worse than B. Because A is coming nearer to the absolute and B is going away from the absolute. So there is more of appearance and there is more of reality. There will be degrees of truth. Here there is dim light. In the Varana there is more light. This is the degree of light. Here there are the walls and that prevent the light to come.
Similarly, there are many, many temptations which prevent a man to be good. But there is no temptation, or he can overcome the distinction of temptation, and therefore he is good. There is, on the veranda, there is more light, and here there is not so much light. That is why there are appearances in the world, and we have to go from appearances to reality. This is Bradleyan philosophy. Akin to this is the philosophy of Bosanke. Akin to this, not the same, similar to this, like Bradley. Bosanke also admits that the reality is one, non-dual, all-comprehensive, non-contradictory, coherent, you see, and wherein every part is in organic connection with every other part and with the whole. This is all like Bradley, no doubt. But what is the difference then? Why should I have this different individuality and value? Bosanke has produced two volumes of individuality and value. What does it mean? It is nothing but out of Bradley the Bosanke comes. He has put degrees of reality there, now he says of value. A man is more valuable than another man. A novice is more valuable, less valuable, and an expert is more valuable. That is the difference of degree. What has Bosanke done more than what Bradley has done? But he has said one point very good, namely, that he has not sacrificed the parts on the altar of the whole. That is, he has not sacrificed the parts on the altar of the whole. Remember, you cut a branch and the tree grows. You cut two branches, if it has several branches, 10 branches, you cut one branch, the tree is not affected. Of course, the tree may be affected. We have not asked the tree whether you are painful or not, whether you are mourning in this. We have not asked. But we protect ourselves and we feel as if the tree is quite unaware of its one branch being cut. So if one part is cut, we do not mind it. Nature has provided us with different things. We have got two lungs. If one lung go out of order, man can live by the other lung. Two eyes. One eye is blind, another eye can see. Two kidneys. You just see, but one heart. There is one heart and one brain. Accepting that, God has provided us with two legs, with two arms, with two lungs, with two kidneys. Wonderful capacity. And yet, they are all together bound in one organism, one person. So, Bosanke has said, Bradley has not said this. All the appearances are not appearances. There are some appearances which are as good as realities. And what are they? The person. Individuality. Man has got his own individuality. You take a pomegranate. I am taking it for my own sake. Not that it is given by Ramanuja, but take a pomegranate. Every seed of it is sweet. Does the sweetness belong to another sweet also? It may or may not. What care has he for one seed which is so sweet in the pomegranate? Take another sweet, it has got its own individuality. It is, you see, it is in the whole, no doubt, but it has got its own individuality. You are in the same class. Now one man gets 50%, another man gets 75%. Now that man who has got 50% has got his own individuality. He has written his paper in that manner. He is what he has to say in the answer book. That man has got 75% marks. He has his own individuality. Between the two there is a difference of degree, no doubt. But every man has got his own individuality. A man projects what he is. Speak and you are. My PhD guide was saying, speak and you are. If you don't speak and keep mum, then one doesn't know whether you know or not. What is in my hand? You can't say. There may be a coin or may not be a coin. You can't say it till I open my fist. If I keep it this way, it is not possible. So it is not the potentiality that tells a man, it is the actuality. So Bosanke has made two points very clear, that we are not sacrificing the persons on the altar of the whole. We are not sacrificing them. We are keeping them intact. A person may show more. Why should Thomas Carlyle be one? Why should there be hero and hero worship, as he has written? Where should be? Is it? The creature of circumstances? No, he is the creator of circumstances. A man may create circumstances, And therefore, he will be the individual of individuals, you see. As Royce has said afterwards, he has got his own individuality. That individuality will not be taken by another, usurped by another person. That individuality will not be lost. That individuality will be there, in spite of the fact that the whole, it is in the whole. No doubt it will not have a war with the whole, but it will show that I have got an individuality. I may just tell a personal example. It's by way of digression. When I was teaching in this Jaswant College, there was a principal. And all the other professors, we were 14 in number, and all the other professors, excepting me, they made a common cause and said that the MA class, there should be only 6 students. Why? On what ground? Because we can give personal attention to each one of them and they can be come in first class. And I never knew anything. And then we got a call from the principal. Well, we have a meeting and just decided in the meeting. And we went there. And of course, I never knew what was coming in. I took the last bench. Usually I generally take so that I can go at any time and come at any time. That is the safest. Just as the man at the last bench. He is very safe because he can go at any time and come at any time without disturbing the... If he comes from this door, he will disturb the whole audience. But if he comes by that, then there will be no disturbance at all. He will silently come and silently take his in, silently go away. That was my position, you see. So all of them went there, and then the principal asked, yes? And they said, we want to give personal attention at the MA level, you see. And we want to make as good or as bad professors as we are, you see. And the principal, of course, was impressed by all this consensus of opinion. Then what have you to say? But I have nothing to say, I have to go by the majority. I replied that, no, I want to know your personal opinion. Then if you are going to do as I wish, then of course I shall tell, otherwise not. Then he said, say it. Then I don't mind if there are 60 students in my class. Not 6, but let there be 60 students. And I was allowed to have 60 students, and otherwise allowed to 6 students. This happened in this Jaswant College. For which the witness is Professor Amar. Kaun Baba? I am Professor Amar. Vyasiji. Kya Baba Vyasiji? I said, who are you? Now this is, I showed my individuality. And others were only commoners. You see, because they had plotted before without consulting me. I would have said to them, no, I don't agree. Even to them. But I knew nothing about it. But I wanted this example by way of digression, but by making it too plain to you that individuality is individuality. Meaning, none can be a dhate. Others will be dhates, non-dhates. And they will be equal. But what of that? There is individuality in me, and there was no individuality in them. That is the meaning. So, Bosanke went beyond Bradley in saying, no, in the parts we can find individuality. And that individuality will very close approximately to the absolute. One who is truthful, more honest, more devoted, you see. And in that way, all the good virtues about that absolute is there, then naturally he will be next to that absolute. He will be more real than anybody else. And all, there will be appearances. They are all appearances, no doubt, considered from the viewpoint of the whole. But there will be some appearances which will show their individuality. So individuality and value. The value of a single person will be more than the values of all the persons put together. So that is what Bosanke did beyond Bradley. Coming out of Bradley, agreeing with Bradley, with the main thesis, that reality is comprehensive, yet he showed there is difference between appearances also. And that is the mark of individuality. And what will he say that, how is it then? The more the comprehensiveness, the more the value, the more the contribution, the more it is approximation to the whole. The more he shares in the attribute of having that of the whole, why is the whole to be reality? Being more comprehensive, more harmonious, free from contradiction. If these are in excess in a particular man, then that individual is akin more with the whole than with the others. So there are appearances, no doubt, but all appearances are not of the same value. Some have more value and some have less value. This is the contribution of Bosanke over Bradley. Then we go further and just see how out of Bosanke comes Pringle Pattison. You see, he has a book very cool, known as the Idea of God, probably. Is it not? Idea of God. Idea of God, yes. Otherwise, you see, my knowledge has become rusting now, and therefore I have to refresh it sometimes. Idea of God. Now, in that Idea of God, he is a mere historian, not a great contributor, not a great philosopher like Hegel or Kant or Royce, Bradley or Bosanke. He is a mere historian, not a man of great value, but he has contributed still something. Individuality is, all right, individuality, but what? The whole exists, the whole persists, the whole is abiding, God is everlasting. But what about this individual man? Will he be as abiding, as everlasting as that? That problem. Meaning that problem is not about the value, but about the abiding nature. About the nature. If in the pomegranate, for example, if some seeds become rotten, then you throw the whole pomegranate. Suppose. You throw the whole pomegranate. Because the parts are more valuable than the whole. Should we do that? Is it necessary that we should consider the parts as more valuable now than the whole? What becomes of the parts? What becomes of human beings after death? Are the whole, for example, if men die every day, they are buried or cremated, and yet the society goes on. Every day you will find that something, somebody is being burnt or somebody is being burnt, and yet the Jodhpur goes on. And going on for hundreds of years it will be like this. The society goes on. Let professors come in and professors go, students come in. The SMK College or the Jashwan College will go on, the University of Jodhpur will go on. Here we see examples that the whole is more real than the parts. The institution goes on. Parliament is still living, British Parliament. The democracy is still living. We find everywhere that the whole is more alive than all these parts. Takes that problem, the Pringle Pattison, and says no. Even after death, the individual persists. How does he know? I don't know. But I am telling you what his conclusions.